This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Gas prices over the weekend averaged $2.61 across the country and well over $3 at many places. So a fill-up ran you almost $40 if you needed 15 gallons, or $130 if your 50-gallon tank was dry. And things aren't likely to get better in these last 2 weeks of the summer driving season. After Labor Day, Americans tend to stay closer to home and demand for gas falls, but we're told not to expect much, if anything, in the way of relief at the pump this year. And while there's no shortage of complaints about the price, do we buy less gas, drive less, park the car, and pull the bike out of the shed? Well, sure, some of us do, but not so you could actually measure the difference in sales. How high does gas have to go before our behavior changes? And is that tipping point economic or psychological? And how do they set retail gas prices anyway? Later in the program, RNC Chairman Ken Melman joins us to take calls as the Republican Party reaches out to African Americans. But first, how high per gallon are you willing to go? Call us now with your questions about retail gas prices, how the corner gas station sets its price, and why it changes it. Later, we'll focus on why, when, and how behavior reacts to high prices. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. To help us demystify the numbers game at the pump, we turn to Tom Klosa, also known as Pump Daddy. He's the chief oil analyst for Oil Price Information Service, and he joins us by phone from his office in Wall, New Jersey. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil. Nice to be here.
So what are the prices at the pumps there in Wall, New Jersey?
We're right around the national average at about $2.61 here, and we'll probably go a little bit higher with the rest of the country in the next few weeks. The one thing I would disagree with probably in your opening comments, though, is I do think you'll see a significant decrease this year. It'll be the temporary decrease that you see with wintertime that'll bring prices down 25% or 30%. At these high numbers, that's a significant amount.
Okay, so prices will go down, but not in the immediate future.
No, and they'll go down, and then they'll go up again next spring. That's pretty much guaranteed as well. The problem in the immediate forecast here is that we're still using quite a bit, regardless of how much people are whining and moaning about the high prices. And from what I can see from the tropical forecasters, the next 3 or 4 weeks are probably going to see a raising of the bar in terms of tropical activity, and that really spells trouble and makes the folks that sell into the market very frightened to sell short or to take big sales position.
So, in other words, you look at the hurricane forecast and say, if there's hurricanes coming, people are going to buy more gas.
Yeah, if you get a Category 3 Gulf of Mexico hurricane between now and, let's say, Labor Day, it's probably good for another 5 or 15 cent increase, just its presence there. If it actually hits between Pascagoula, Mississippi, and Corpus Christi, which is what I would call to as the refinery arc, you could see a much, much larger increase, albeit temporary.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, the price of oil when I checked it this morning was over $65 a barrel. How closely does that track to the price of gasoline?
Well, for every dollar a barrel increase in the price of crude oil, you are going to see a 2.2 cents or so raw increase in the price of gasoline. One of the problems is we quote oil in dollars per barrel and gasoline in cents per gallon. But in cents per gallon, you could say that's about $1.60 a gallon for the price of crude. You have to start there and then make the gasoline from it. And it used to be that you make the gasoline and sell it for about 12 to 15 cents over the price of crude. But nowadays, that's in excess of 30 cents.
Okay. Now, how do they arrive at the price at the corner gas station?
Well, they have very little leverage, actually, and the corner gas station isn't owned very much by major oil companies anymore, although people perceive that they are because they see the major flags. They're mostly entrepreneurial new Americans to a great extent, and they have very little role and very little leverage in what they pay. So nowadays, let's say the price of crude is $1.60, you add 35 cents onto that, you're at $1.95. Your typical tax across the country is about 45 cents. So you're up to about $2.40 as the sort of cost going into the station. So the station operator might, under the best of circumstances, have about 20 cents to play with in gross margin. And of that 20 cents these days, credit card fees, because many, many more people are buying their gasoline with credit cards at, let's say, 3 or 4% processing costs, that'll take, a 7 or 8 or a 9 cent margin out of the retailer's pocket. So the retailers are the messengers that are blamed for the message, but there's a lot of folks that are prospering, including most notably the producers, the refiners, and the credit card companies.
How often does the price change down at the local Exxon or Super Saver?
Well, the price changes every day in the wholesale markets, and it depends across the country whether one lives in a rural or suburban area or a metro area. One of the antiquated ways of pricing gasoline is to the dealer, who has, again, no leverage, and they deliver it into their station, and they might change the price in very active markets once a week. But for many of the stations you see across the country, the price changes every day but Sunday, and many times it trades actually changes at 6 o'clock at night, and it changes in accordance with what happens in the commodities market, which is the New York Mercantile Exchange in New York, in downtown New York.
And so prices can change even sometimes more than once a day?
They can, and they can on the wholesale markets, and they do on the wholesale markets. It's a little bit difficult for the folks that actually post the prices at the pump to go up twice in a day. It's one of those interesting things in America that people won't get too upset about cable increases or, you know, their bills that are sort of buried and hard to decipher at home. But raise that price of gasoline with those big red placards, and it gets the blood pressure going to where you could float them in the Macy's parade.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us, or email us, totn@npr.org. And we'll begin with Chris. Chris calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask you and your guest, or your guest, I have a friend here who owns, his family is Pakistani, and they own a small gas station. They take private shipments from whoever they get gas from. But he's told me, like, over the last few months as gas has risen, their last shipment they got like a week or two ago, they pay $1.30, $1.40 per gallon on, you know, this mass shipment that comes in. And then they're selling it for $2.40, $2.50, $2.60 a gallon, depending on what grade you buy. Doesn't anybody see it? Or I mean, the way we see it, it just seems to be like profiteering. It seems to be like the dot-com bubble. And it seems to be like oil companies are trying to see how high they can raise it to see how much we will pay for it. But, I mean, there has to be an end to the bubble. Someone has got to get wise. I mean, hurricanes have been around longer than we've had gasoline. And, I mean, hurricanes will always be around. You know, it seems like there's always excuses for why the price of gas is going up. But then oil companies are having record profits. Well, if the oil was so expensive, then profits wouldn't be so great, would they?
Tom Closer?
Well, their profits, I don't think they'd probably be embarrassed by their profits, although it certainly would be a valid criticism that they are off the charts. You know, the price of bringing a barrel of crude oil to the market worldwide is still only about $5, $6, maybe $7, and it's selling for 10 times that. It probably traditionally through the years sold for 3 or 4 times that at the most. The same technology that brings things to life on your desktop brings crude oil to market internationally. Problem is there's a long lead time on that, and when you get a little bit of a supply squeeze or a perception of it, it takes a while to get that crude out. But it's not, you know, where I would sort of differ, and this is on the refining side as well, is that they don't need to get together in smoke-filled rooms to do this, and not that they ever have, but the price is pretty much established like a stock price for a stock. Whether it's warranted or not, the price is established in New York every day, and the market reacts to those prices like an adjustable rate mortgage. Now, as far as your local gas station goes, I can tell you one of the myths now is that people at the gas stations that you buy the gasoline from might have gotten a delivery a week ago or 2 weeks ago at a much, much cheaper price. Almost all the stations you'll see across the country now get deliveries every day. In order to stay in business, a typical gasoline station probably needs to move 100,000 gallons a month or more, and some of them move 500,000 per month. So it's not like it was in the 70s or even the early 80s where we bought this gasoline on July 31st at $1.40 a gallon. The prices weren't that low, by the way. And then we sold it for a 30-cent markup for the next 20 days. They're getting deliveries every day, and in a virtual adjustable rate mortgage environment, they're getting increases every day.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Tom Klose, we wanted to thank you for your time today.
Okay, thanks.
Tom Klose, Chief Oil Analyst for Oil Price Information Service, with us from his office in Wall, New Jersey. Well, speaking of buying gas ahead of time at a cheap price, our next guest has made the most of prepaid gas. He took a gamble and bought thousands of dollars worth of gas in advance, and it's paying off, well, pretty well for his contracting business. Joining us now by phone from St. Cloud, Minnesota, is John McDowell. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
So prepaid gas, how much did you buy?
Well, we have purchased, this last purchase I bought $50,000 worth of gasoline.
And you put it in a tank somewhere?
Well, this facility here in St. Cloud, Minnesota has capacity to store over 1 million gallons of fuel. And at the price that I buy it, that particular time was $195.9, goes in the ground at the time of purchase, and I fuel at that price, or my fleet fuels at that price until we run out.
Mm-hmm. So you're buying gas at last year's prices.
Well, that's the concept here. It's the first fuel banks. There's four facilities in the St. Cloud area, and then there's one down in the Monticello area, which is about 30 miles south of us. But it's absolutely fantastic. You have to watch the market. A single user is, you have to don't go in at today's price and buy thousands of dollars, and then it goes backwards on you because you're going to lose your money.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, and following the market and the amount that we go through a day, it's huge. It's a huge thing for us.
And we just have a few seconds, but this is for your company. Do you do this as an individual as well?
At my company, I do, and individually, I do too. And I'm real careful on how I do buy that. So
you're doing all right.
Yes, it's been fantastic for us. We've been with the fuel bank system since 1983. And that's 22-year history, and I think my savings has been well over 10% over that 22-year history.
So if you're in St. Cloud, Minnesota, John McDowell's running the cars, picking up everybody and dropping them off.
Well, not quite.
John McDowell, thanks very much.
Thank you.
John McDowell joined us by phone from St. Cloud, Minnesota. When we come back, we'll talk about the psychological aspects of how we deal with the price at the pump. This is Talk of the Nation. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Truck and cab drivers, landscape and delivery services, soccer moms, and baseball dads are all feeling the pinch of high prices at the gas pump, but are they really changing the way they go about their everyday lives? Well, what about you? Have you scaled back on your driving or scaled back on the little luxuries because gas costs so much? What does the price of gas do to your behavior? You're invited to join us and also ask questions about those little tricks you think will keep gas guzzling to a relative minimum. Do you ever coast downhill in neutral, for example? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our next guest studies the internal dialogue that all of us have about issues like gas prices, the way we digest those prices and move on, or how we may let prices change our behavior. Joining us from the studios of WNDV in South Bend, Indiana, is Bruce Wren, a marketing professor at Indiana University's South Bend campus. Nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
So what do most consumers consider when they see higher prices at the corner gas station, which they see just about every day now?
Well, consumer behaviorists have studied the way consumers perceive prices and have determined that we really have two types of prices that we refer to: an internal reference price, which is the price or price range that we retrieve from memory,
mm-hmm.
and an external reference price, which is what we see at the advertised.
And when those two things are out of whack?
Well, there's a theory that is called the assimilation contrast theory. If we see this external reference price that is within that internal price range, we assimilate it, and it then begins to adjust those mm-hmm. internal prices. But if it's too high, if it's implausibly high and outside of that range, then it's contrasted and will begin to change our behavior rather than assimilate that price into the way we think about prices.
And I guess the whole trick is to figure out what that point is where we actually change our behavior.
Exactly.
Now, are Americans changing their behavior, consuming less gas?
I think the numbers that are most recent are showing that actually demand is up about 1.5% over last year, and of course prices were much lower last year. So,
mm-hmm.
What explains why we would be paying more, being willing to pay more, and increase demand when prices keep going up and up? And I think one of the explanations is that using gas is so woven into our lifestyles that rather than making an adjustment in our lifestyles, we will try and save money someplace else and continue to pay those higher prices.
How big a deal is it for most Americans when price of gas even goes up a dollar a gallon, say that jump from $2.50 to $3.50 a gallon?
Well, I think we have threshold prices that we have in our minds that if gas exceeds that price, then we are definitely going to make an adjustment in our behavior. And so if some people have $3 or maybe $4 a gallon in, as a threshold price, then they'll begin to adjust that behavior. They'll carpool or in some way other behavioral pattern will change to accommodate that threshold price being exceeded.
Okay. Now, it's an interesting moment for the people who sell oil and gasoline, and that is, as they look at this behavior, the prices have gone, well, everybody's complaining, sky high, yet we're buying more gas. Does that suggest to them that maybe they can keep prices at this level and will still buy it?
Well, I think several things are going on there. One is we can contrast this situation to, for example, what happened back in the 70s when a freeze existed in Brazil and coffee prices increased by about 300% overnight. And people said, I'm not paying that kind of price for coffee, and they began to adjust their behavior and go to substitutes. But what's our good substitute for gasoline? So whatever happens with those prices, it's going to take quite a bit for people to change their behavior, I think.
Explore those. Are there other examples of where prices moved and people actually adjusted behavior?
Well, just sticking with gasoline and the changes over time with gasoline and the, you know, kind of behavioral patterns that people said that they were going to enact if gas increased. I remember back in the 70s, Harris organization did a survey, and people said back then, well, I'm going to stop driving if gas gets to be a dollar a gallon. So apparently there's this big disconnect between what people say and what they will actually do.
Here's an email we got from Jamie. Being able to get to work and school, we don't have much choice in how to get there. However, high gas prices have already stopped my family from going to our annual camping trip over the Labor Day weekend. We stopped going out to eat once a week and only eat out as a family once every 2 months. Excuse me. We stay home instead of going to the mall. We have friends over instead of going to a place where the kids can play while we talk. We only go to one movie every 3 months instead of one every 2 weeks. We bought only the bare minimum for school clothes. I will make do with what I have instead of buying new pieces for my work wardrobe. So even though gas sales are not going down, other activities that are done with disposable income are not being done. Where's the development of other transportation fuel options? Don't give me hybrids. They still use gas. High prices are just fueling the demand to move from gas to something else. When that happens, oil will lose its power. Well, I'm not sure you can address the last part of that. We've talked about that on other programs as well. But those are the kinds of adjustments some people are beginning to make.
Right, exactly. And other people are making cutbacks outside of gas purchases, too. I know Walmart recently, just this last week, said that their lower earnings in the second quarter and expected earnings in the third quarter were going to be revised downward to because they said people were not buying at Walmart and were instead continuing to buy gas at higher prices. So most people have to find a way to make adjustments someplace if it's not dramatically reducing how much of your income goes to gasoline. Mm-hmm. It's got to be someplace else.
Are there other early indicators? If a lot of people go into the gas station and say, $5 worth, please, would that be an indicator that people are reacting to high prices?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a number of things that that people will begin to do. It's interesting to see that people will be willing to drive across town and wait in line 20 minutes and idle their car and drive that far to save 10 or 20 cents a gallon. And mm-hmm. you have to say, what explains why they would be willing to do that? You end up saving on 20-gallon purchase $4. People would not drive across town to save $4 on, let's say, a coat for $196 instead of $200. They'd think that was irrational behavior, but they think it's perfectly rational to drive across town to save 20 cents a gallon and end up saving $4. Mm.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Jake. Jake calling from Las Vegas.
Hi. I have a question for you guys on shortages in refineries. I work for Halliburton, and I've noticed that Schlumberger, Halliburton, and other companies currently moving into towns like Vernal, Utah, and others. There's a lot of oil wells being uncapped right now. The market's really booming out there, but I also wanted to ask, as far as what a gentleman had called in earlier about and was asking about prices and why they stay so high, there was a professor at MIT, a physicist, who made a breakthrough in cold fusion. And a week before he had a meeting with the Department of Energy, he was beaten to death in his front yard. So I don't know what – I can't remember what the guy's name was, but I wanted to see if the gentleman can comment on that also.
I'm not sure. Do you know anything about that, Mr. Wren?
Afraid I don't.
But obviously, when prices go up, oil fields out in the West, which weren't economically productive at lower gas prices, well, I guess they take the caps off and start pumping oil.
Well, that, of course. But my question is concerning elitism and the what's going on with fuel prices and why they've stayed so high when there's obviously a shortage in refineries and these guys could easily make more refineries.
Yes, refinery capacity is a big issue, isn't it, Bruce Wren?
Yes, I think the statistics are that I don't think there's been a major refinery built in the U.S. in the last 20 years, is it?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and so anytime there's any minor glitch at any refinery, if there's something that happens in St. Louis refinery in the Midwest, then I start paying higher gas prices right mm-hmm. here.
And that's why Tom Klose was talking earlier about the worries if a hurricane hit the Gulf Coast, which is, as he said, refinery center. Jake, thanks very much for the phone call. Now, I wonder, getting back to this, what if we had to ration gas like we did in the 1970s? That was a nightmare. Some of us remember Jimmy Carter wearing his sweater and asking everybody to turn down their thermostats. Is there any price that you can imagine that would, you know, obviously shortages are shortages, perceived shortage is another issue.
Right. Well, it's all about perception, and I think people have established these threshold prices that they, if they perceive the external price as exceeding that, then they say, you know, we've got to do something. But that price can be different for different individuals. And your emailer earlier indicated mm-hmm. that they had already, with perhaps gas prices in the $2 range, had already started to marginally change their behavior, maybe not dramatically or radically change the behavior. But they definitely are going to be doing something mm-hmm. to adjust.
And if you were looking for something that would be a tipping point, would it be a price increase or some incident or something?
Well, it could be some environmental shock that actually drives those prices up by an amount that people are unwilling to assimilate. Mm-hmm. So it could be something that happens on the world stage, or it could be more local. But, yeah, I think there's always that possibility that something could drive prices up by an increment that is just outside of the range of acceptability.
Bruce Wren, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Bruce Wren is a marketing professor at Indiana University in South Bend. He joined us from WNDV in South Bend, Indiana. Here's an email from Leslie. I bought a scooter at the beginning of summer. Now my weekly commute consumes only 1 gallon, costing me now $2.47, as opposed to the $50 it costs to drive our Jeep. And it's fun. By the way, I'm a nearly 50-year-old female who never drove a motorcycle before this. There's an example of a behavior adjusting. But there are tricks that a lot of us incorporate in our daily behavior to try to spend a little less money on our commutes or that drive out to visit grandma. What works and what doesn't when it comes to saving gallons of gas? What keeps us away from the gas station maybe for an extra day or two? Our next guest is a master certified auto technician for AAA, the American Automobile Association. John Nielsen joins us from the studios of member station WUCF in Orlando, Florida. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's great to be with you, Neil.
So a lot of people figure that if you coast in neutral and turn off the AC, you'll save some gasoline.
You might save a little bit, probably not enough to notice, and there might be some issues with safety doing that.
Like what?
Well, putting a car in neutral, you're actually going to slow down more slowly because the engine actually uses the, under deceleration, the engine itself will help slow you down.
Mm-hmm.
It's better simply to anticipate stopping. Take your foot off the gas and simply glide. And same on acceleration. Take your time accelerating. The jackrabbit starts really do waste fuel. That's a great way to save.
What's the silliest thing you see people doing in an effort to save gas?
Probably things like turning their car off while they're decelerating, going down a hill. I think the best thing that folks can do is just drive their car very carefully, you know, be very slow and deliberate in what you do. Anything driving across town to save 5 cents a gallon might be kind of silly when you add it all up.
We're talking about ways to save fuel in these days of high prices. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email we got from Pete Sawyer in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I heard about getting better mileage by buying a magnetic contraption for about $100, so I duct taped a 100-pound magnet to my fuel line just before the gas goes into the engine. After 7 tanks so far, I've averaged 11% increase in my miles per gallon. I'm driving a 92 Saturn. Hope that helps somebody. Have you heard about magnetic contraptions that can help you save fuel?
I have. In fact, I've tested a bunch of them, and quite honestly, if you add an extra 100 pounds of weight to a car, typically what will happen is you'll get lower fuel economy simply from the increased weight. Putting a magnet in the fuel system has been around, for a long time. And in dyno tests that I've run, I've never seen any that really made a change in fuel economy.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Stacy. Stacy in Somerville, South Carolina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I can see a lot of ways that I'm trying to make changes to help with this crunch at the gas pump. Driving my children back and forth to school is very important to me. It's good family time for us. But driving a 98 minivan that's not fabulous on gas causes problems. So we're here in South Carolina where the weather's very warm. The kids are already back to school. This is the third week back. Last week, our real field temperature in mid-afternoon was about 115 degrees. I am not using the AC like I used to. When I'm sitting in the pickup line, I'm not sitting there for 20 minutes with my car running and my AC on, chatting on the phone like a lot of the parents are. And I'm looking around, and I see that a lot of the moms have turned off the AC, and we're rolling down our windows, and we're just kind of sitting there sweating it out.
Mm-hmm.
I've checked the air pressure in my tires much more recently than I ever used to before, because my mechanic reminded me that, you know, that can have an effect on your gas mileage.
Well, let's get
oil changed. Even switched long distance carriers just to ease up a few extra dollars a month,
mm-hmm.
so that it can go into the gas tank.
Well, there's a possible solution. But what about some of the other ideas that Stacy was mentioning, John Nielsen? Turning off the air conditioning.
Stacy brought up a number of good points, and you can save fuel, certainly at low speed around town, by turning off your air conditioner. And even better yet, while you're waiting in a line or waiting to pick up the kids, go ahead and turn your car off. That definitely will save fuel. And I think Stacy was also talking a little bit about when you save fuel, when you talk about saving energy, a lot of it's make sure your tires are properly inflated, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Don't carry around extra weight. Make sure your air filter is clean in the car. But a lot of it is lifestyle. Make sure that you that you don't take, you know, that you consolidate your trips. How it's amazing when we look at the cars that folks are buying today. Minivans, especially SUVs and trucks, are still very, very popular. And that's not where we get optimum fuel economy. Mm-hmm. And even with the change in housing location, just the distance you have to drive to work or to school can certainly make a big change in the money you spend every month on energy.
Stacy, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we'll end with this email. This from Lori in Richfield, Ohio. Sunday, we walked to the local high school for the circus. Our six-year-old loved it, but we would never have gone had we had to drive. We're already talking about supporting our high school football games this year because, again, walking distance. Also, our son's swimming lesson some 20 miles away. We're stopped in favor of the local city pool a few blocks away. Hey, walking, that'll definitely save you some fuel. And John Nielsen, thanks very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
John Nielsen, a master certified auto technician for the AAA. He joined us from the studios of WUCF in Orlando, Florida. When we come back from a short break, Republican National Committee Chairman Ken Millman joins us to talk about GOP efforts to court African Americans. 800-989-8255. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.